I just felt like it was a little bit of a kick in the balls, to be honest.
It came a lot sooner than I thought that I would be the oldest player on the team.
That's all you got, brother. That's all you got.
The word of the day would have been hyper-realism.
We're bad at soccer, but we're good on a bagel.
Holding the high line with Rabbi in red. Talking the rapids and turning heads. With questions from you and analysis. In your car, in your home. Thank you for tuning to Holding the High Line.
Hello, Colorado Rapids fans. You are listening to the final regular season episode of Holding the High Line with Rabbi in Red. My name is Matt Pollard. It is Wednesday, October 7th, 2024, decision day minus three. The Poch era has begun for the USMNT and was kind of underwhelming, at least the Mexico game was. An NWSL team has launched possibly the most cringe branding in league history, and your Colorado Rapids are headed to Austin and fortunately do not have to play the Texas Longhorns this Saturday. Joining me now, a man who's getting hyped for spooky season, Rabbi Mark Goodman. Rabbi, what are the Goodman family Halloween plans, and is the Goodman household, where are you on the spectrum between the full-size candy bars and the super cheap fun-size candy bars?
That's an interesting question. We will probably buy full-size candy bars for the people who come to the door.
Let's go!
If only because we strangely are at a point in the neighborhood where nobody really comes for trick-or-treating. Like, nobody comes to our house. There's just all these other really good streets to hit up. And so our block kind of sucks. And so nobody comes and trick-or-treats there. So in the past, we've like regularly had a whole year where we had just five trick-or-treaters. So for that amount, I might as well just buy five Snickers bars and just go to town. Plus, Snickers is the best way to go. Aster, the younger child, is super into spooky season and Halloween. Last year, I had to buy all these placards that look like tombstone markers for the front lawn. But I'm not super into it myself, like, honestly, because of my Jewish holiday work season. So there's the preparation for Rosh Hashanah, and then Rosh Hashanah, then there's Yom Kippur, and then starting tonight, and into the next week is Sukkot, which ends on the 27th, I think, this year, with a final holiday, which is called Simchat Torah. And so, like, I do, no joke, technically we have five or six different holidays in the month of October this year. And then 4 days later we have Halloween. Like, I'm all holidayed out. Like, I'm not all that festive. That being said, Halloween's way better than the Jewish holidays in that, like, you know, there are no Jewish holidays where you get a full Twix bar or Kit Kat as part of the religion. I'm making a brisket right now upstairs as we speak. I'm in that festive season where you put a brisket in the oven at 8 o'clock at night and you have to set an alarm to wake yourself up at midnight to take it out. So that's good times. But that should be a lot of fun for us. So it's brisket season for me and spooky season for the rest of the Western world.
Mm-hmm. I'm kind of curious, Mark. So listeners, we don't have an exact schedule in terms of the playoffs. Yes, we have general windows. I think we touched on this last pod, Mark. So decision day is obviously this coming Saturday, October 19th, the wild card games, which the Colorado Rapids will officially not be participating in.
Yay!
Thank you, Vancouver Whitecaps, for fumbling the bag against LAFC like always. That will be midweek, Mark. So I think probably that Wednesday, Thursday, the 23rd, 24th. And then according to MLS's website right now, the best of three series round of 16 is between Friday, October 25th and Sunday, November 10th. That is three weekend periods, Mark. So
Are you feeling better about the format this year? Do you feel like, I mean, we talked about it last year at length, but in short, like, do you feel any different than you did last year about the best of three format?
I'd have to go back and check it, Mark, because I was paying attention to the format. I wasn't necessarily paying attention to the schedule because
you were semi indifferent, sort of okay with it. And I was like, this is dumb. I don't like it. That was basically our takes last year.
I don't like the best of three in that I think it's weird that the format changes from round to round. I think it should either be like, if you want to have a different format for each round of the playoffs, I'm okay with that. I don't think it should be more than a one-off game where the higher seeded team hosts, or a two-leg series, preferably with the higher seeded team getting it at home. The fact that you have a one-game wildcard game midweek, and then that team goes into a short rest game, and then it's a best of three, and then single round after that. I mean, let's be real, Mark. We know why that is the case. Apple TV wants more games in order to sell more ad revenue, and they wanted to ensure that every single team, other than the lowest-seeded wildcard team that could be one away game and done, they wanted to ensure that everybody got a home game.
I think it's mostly the latter, because remember, Apple as a television broadcasting streaming channel didn't have ad revenue until MLS. I mean, like, they didn't, you know, I had Apple before MLS joined the thing, and like, it was a non-ad. That being said, they like the revenue, but I don't know. I mean, my take is that, like, I definitely think that a home and away two-legged series in the traditional sense, the way that it was done in European sports, where it was an aggregate score, I love that. It was so unique and quirky, especially in the American market. But anyways,
I like the best of three series better, Mark, when it's not like a three game week, like a Saturday, Wednesday, Saturday. If we're going with what MLS has right now, which is just the bucketed windows, not necessarily here are the match days for each team and everything, I like the fact that after the wild card round, it's probably weekend games, one a week for the rest of the way. So presumably the Rapids are away to whichever team they'll be playing the 26th, 27th at home the first weekend in November, and then away if there's a third game either on the 9th or the 10th. I should say, Mark, that's going to be absolutely jam-packed. I am not I'd have to consult some people who care more about the calendar situation here. I do not count if a holiday is on a Tuesday or a Thursday. I don't count the closest weekend as being like the weekend of. I don't think having Halloween on a Thursday does not make the following Friday, Saturday, Sunday Halloween weekend for me. But as we've discussed, Mark, you and I are not big Halloween people. But so, Mark, according to my Apple calendar here, Halloween, Thursday, October 31st. Friday, November 1st is Diwali, for those of you who have Indian friends. Then Saturday, November 2nd is Day of the Dead. Daylight Savings is that Sunday the 3rd. Oh, and then, Mark, we have the series finale of America the following Tuesday, November 5th. I've heard even the cast doesn't know how it ends in terms of that final season that we have here with Donald Trump going up against Kamala Harris. But so that's going to be crazy, Mark. MLS Halloween would be fun if we're able to stretch that out, certainly. I'd be really curious to see what people do from a costume standpoint. I don't think I will be. I'll be dressed in my usual. For those of you who don't know, listeners, the Suspenders finally lost a game with me at the final regular season home game for the Rapids. So I think the Suspenders are benched. I'd say TBD on what the tie situation is. Probably going regular tie for that second playoff game for the Rapids rather than a bow tie proper. But Mark, let's get into some actual soccer talk that we have here. Mauricio Pochettino has started his tenure as USMNT head coach. The U.S. had, I'd say, a front foot performance, but kind of meh because the goals were both in the second half, and the second goal to make it 2-0 didn't come until really late in the game, and that was against Panama at Austin. And then the other night, the U.S. played in Guadalajara in a very, very rare friendly against Mexico that wasn't on U.S. soil at the Guadalajara Stadium, and ended up losing that game 2-0. Absolute bonkers free kick from Raul Jimenez, longtime Mexican star striker, and then kind of a broken play in the second half to make it the worst ever Dos Acero that's ever happened, because I don't know that Mexico has beaten the United States Dos Acero off the top of my head. That being said, Mark, it did happen with a number of injuries. Christian Pulisic not available for that second game. And obviously this is happening amid Poch maybe even not even having spoken to all the players that he's called into camp. Zach Steffen confirmed to me the day before, or 2 days before he left to join the United States, he had not had a one-on-one conversation with Mauricio Pochettino. And Zach Steffen sustained what was described as a minor injury by goals.com that had him leave the camp early and was not even on the bench for either games. Mark, what do we make of this? And I guess more importantly, in the context of the cognitive cognitive dissonance that is USMNT Dude Bro Twitter. I feel like if Greg was still at the helm, if Greg had not been fired out of Copa America, I feel like they'd be calling for burning everything down, given you lose to Mexico in Mexico 2-0.
I do not pay attention to USMNT Twitter. I think it's important that I
good life decision there.
Say that now. The people on there somehow, it's really a weird ecosystem in that, like, people freak out and it feels like very divorced from the rest of, like, detached from the rest of soccer. In that, like, people scream, like, there are a couple base axioms of the USMNT Twitter bro, you know, universe. One is all American players should play in Europe, which is a weird idea that, like, basically, you know, if we only put all of our players in Europe, they will by definition be better than if they play in the United States, which is like, I don't really understand that idea, because in order to have that idea, that belief, you have to not watch a lot of soccer, because you have to not watch domestic soccer and then watch a lot of like the Dutch league and the Italian league and the Spanish league. And then you have to automatically know that, like, you have to know what you're talking about, and in that respect you have to know that those teams and leagues are better, right? Like, if you're a backup for Valencia, or if you're playing for Bologna or Atalanta or something else, how does somebody know that that American player is worse than a player who starts for Columbus Crew? Like, how do you calibrate that? And one of the weird things about USMNT Twitter is they just state, you know, blankly that those guys are better. Anyways, point being, back to this game. You know, for me, what's more interesting over the last couple months is trying to get a sense of the Mexico team. It's full of guys that I'm not super familiar with, and I'm still kind of like figuring out their jam. Raul Jimenez,
they're still trying to figure out their jam. That's right. The level of uncertainty.
I mean, Raul Jimenez is an older player who hasn't played a whole lot on the USMNT, on the Mexico, on Eltri, as a starter. He's kind of been like a background figure. And then you've got a couple other guys like Andres Guardado, who is a great player, but he's 38 years old, and like his time is past him. And why he like is starting on this team. Orbelin Pineda is a talented player, but like I don't know that he's like the solution. I just don't, there was just a whole lot of guys on this team who I don't know that they're the guy. And so, you know, like there are some like epic former players from Mexico, and their best lineups of the past were just amazing, you know, and none of those guys are there anymore. You know, you got Ache is a name that comes to mind. Carlos Vela is a name that comes to mind. Chicharito is a name that comes to mind.
Rafa Marquez.
Yeah. Jonathan and Giovanni Dos Santos. Right? Like, those were guys who were like epic, legendary. They were either owned by European teams or, like, you know, speaking of like teams that play in La Liga. And these guys are not that. And so this is like kind of like a Mexico team in transition, and they've been in transition for a year and they haven't quite figured it out yet. And then the US team couldn't beat them. And that was significant, but they were, of course, on the road. And so that's another kind of thing to kind of think about. Your most important point, of course, is was the kind of like the transitional nature of the US team in this match, which was they're missing a number of their best players, Christian Pulisic being the most important. But this was a really weird starting lineup, I thought. Like, you've got Josh Sargent up top. I will continue to say Josh Sargent does not seem to be the answer at striker. I like him. I think he should come off the bench in the 80th minute. I think anything short of that in any game, even a meaningless friendly, is a demonstration that we just don't have the goods. Gianluca Busio started in the center of the midfield as the number 10. I mean, if the starting lineup for the U.S. team doesn't have Weah and McKinney and Adams and
Balogun.
And Balogun, and also more importantly, Christian Pulisic, then it kind of doesn't mean anything. And none of those guys were here. I mean, they started Brendan Aaronson, who I like a lot, Tillman, Jordan Morris, who I like a lot, but not at this stage in the evolution. I mean, he's a solid off the bench option in the 85th, but that's about it. Boosie is kind of a known quantity. Yunus Musa is great, but he didn't have a good game in this one, and he was subbed off in the 46th. Backline is fine. This was a good backline, but yeah, I mean, this was just like not the USMNT or Mexico's best lineup, and so I don't really know that we can take a whole lot from this game. So it's kind of a bummer, but you know, like I'm looking forward to the meaningful games. When, although the bummer with the USMNT is they don't have to qualify. So do any of the games matter?
There's a Gold Cup next summer, Mark, and yeah, and there'll be a Nations League as well. So,
and you need some tune-up friendlies against European powerhouses where you show good. Like you want to play Poland, you want to play England, you want to play Germany and France and Italy, and you want to win a couple of those games. You know, you do not want to feast on the New Zealands and the Ecuadors of the world.
Yeah, no. I think the biggest thing for me, Mark, is just the Poch was brand new. This was his first camp. Obviously, had a lot of travel because they were going to Austin and then to Guadalajara. I don't normally like it, Mark, when like the U.S. just like sets up shop. You know, they've done that with like a window with like two games in Orlando or two games in Florida. I guess you wouldn't have done that with the recent storms that have passed through that area. But I mean, we've seen it where it's everybody flying to L.A. We're playing, you know, at the Galaxy Stadium in Carson, and that's where all of our camp is. And so there's no travel, but you've got all the guys coming over from Europe just to get to Austin. You got to get from Austin to Mexico and then get back to play on the weekend, presumably for their European clubs. You didn't have a bunch of players, and then Poch is traveling as well. So this was always going to be the messiest one because Poch is new to everybody. Everybody's new to Poch, and they're trying to figure things out on the fly. So I don't think we can take a lot from it, really. I think the biggest thing to take away, at least for me, was the actual roster call-ups of, you know, Poch having a couple of weeks from in principle agreeing to taking the job to it actually officially happening with all the paperwork and whatever things needed to be cleared up from his time at Chelsea to hopefully watch some of these games. And so I think it's more less than the actual results or who played necessarily was who he called in. Like, who are the guys who he thinks are, you know, on the outskirts of his roster? And so the fact that Zach Steffen made that group, there were a few center backs to potentially pair with Tim Ream. And for the guys who were healthy playing in Europe, it was most of the usual suspects or usual guys who we would say are a value that you would want in the team. A Joe Scally to back up or Serginho Dest, for example, shows that Poch knows somewhat of what he's talking about. So it's going to take time. They have at least a little bit of time for it to handle. I don't necessarily care about it. That being said, like, yeah, it's salty. There's no context for me, Mark, where losing to Mexico and having a group chat with all of my Mexican friends from the youth teams that we played on, where I'm the one gringo and they're just dunking on me when El Tri beats the United States. Like, that's not fun. That doesn't feel good. There is no scenario where losing to Mexico, particularly with the performance that they had, where that scene is acceptable or excusable or just absolutely okay. So that's annoying. But here at Holding the High Line, context matters. And in that context, like, meh, we move on. No one will remember this game if the U.S. is in a semifinal in 18 months. Mark, the other unfortunate soccer thing that we get to talk about, we do not talk a lot of NWSL on the show when it does not involve a Colorado girl or a team coming to Denver, Colorado, but there is a new NWSL team that will be coming to Boston, Massachusetts, and they announced their branding. By the time you're listening to this, listeners, potentially like their social media will have been completely scrubbed and their name will have been scrubbed and all the posts that we're talking about might not even exist anymore. They launched their branding. They were going with Boss Nation FC. That was kind of a meh name, and they dropped it with a video that included, I use the a crude middle school joke on repeat about spherical objects in sports that are also part of the cisgender male anatomy, and just repeating that over and over again, like a parody SNL skit, like a skit that's making fun of how unfunny and repetitive bad SNL skits can be. And then they had Tom Brady involved in it as well. They involved the other sports teams, or reference to the other sports teams in Boston. I should say exclusively the men's sports teams as well involved with that. And so, Mark, the branding wasn't really well liked. The theme as well, that came out with it. And while I didn't necessarily notice this immediately or think it, I thought it was cringe. I didn't think it was funny. I didn't think it was interesting or engaging. But the NWSL community, which is not full of a bunch of cisgender white guys like this podcast is, pointed out rightfully so and very quickly that this wasn't necessarily seen as inclusive. And there were even some references that could be that were very easily seen by the community as being transphobic or anti-LGBTQ. The club, the Twitter account at NWSL Boston, has since come out with an apology acknowledging that the branding was wrong. There was some language in there about how they didn't necessarily see this coming because it mattered in focus groups. People who run club teams from the marketing standpoint in North America, like every single time one of these has come out with an absolute dud, whether it was Club de Foot Montreal or the Chicago Fire rebrand, or I think Louisville had one as well, Mark, in the USL Championship, the excuse is always, well, this tested well in focus groups. If your focus groups do not include leadership from the supporters group that's involved, most ardent fans involved, and in particular, all three, or I would say, a non-binary gender representation and the entire colors of the rainbow, I would say both from a gender and a sexuality standpoint and also from an ethnic standpoint, you are not doing a good job of pooling a representative sample in terms of your fan base. And so, Mark, this just reeked. I know, Mark, you probably, outside of maybe the Celtics, don't pay attention to Boston sports fans as well, but if you look at least some of the stereotypes and maybe what gets portrayed online, albeit it's a bit hyperbolic, Boston's a little rowdy, potentially right wing, and is even implied like there being racist components to that. I remember, I think this was PK Subban, who is a black NHL defenseman for a number of years with Montreal, and he played for a few other teams, not just the Canadiens, and he had a really good game in Boston, and in the Boston area on Twitter, the N-word was trending after that. Not saying that represents all of Boston sports fans. If there is one fan base this is probably not representative of, it is probably the New England Revolution to say that. But so, like, it looked, it fit into the white right-wing dude bro aura that has maybe been represented at least publicly on that. So, Mark, this is cringe. Fortunately, they've pivoted, albeit 24 hours too late. They probably should have prevented this in the first place. And this is yet just another example of the NWSL and WOSO in America getting things wrong in terms of being cringe towards women and being cringe towards the LGBT community. Rabbi, your thoughts, and how much are we hoping that For Denver FC does not make this mistake?
So, I guess, making fun of, sports have balls. Balls are good. Balls are funny. I think it's dumb and cringe, like you pointed out. I don't know that it's inherently transphobic. It just that, the intent wasn't to make fun of trans people, and they're not even really necessarily excluded. And also, if you're being excluded from a really bad advertisement, that's a good thing. They weren't intentionally, but yeah, I could see why it might be perceived that way, but I didn't read it that way. I just thought, I think the name is bad. Boss and Boz and Boston. It's just not, there's nothing there.
Nation sounds like a subset of the Boston specific Barstool sports stuff. Like, it doesn't sound like, if you told me, oh, Matt, what do you know about Boss Nation? I don't assume it's a football club.
So the ideas behind mascots, right? Or soccer naming ideas. So the soccer naming world, the default, and we had this with MLS a couple of years ago, the default is to use a Britishism as your soccer team, or even an Italianism or a Spanishism. So, there's still a lot of available ground there, but there was a time a couple of years ago where everybody in MLS named their team United, right? Atlanta United and Minnesota United dropped, within a few weeks of each other as name ideas. And the problem with that is the reason English teams named their team was United would be there was a pub team on the east side of Sheffield. There was a pub team on the north side of Sheffield. And then in order to form a club, because they didn't have enough money, the two Sheffield teams united, and you get Sheffield United. Like,
we are united. We are united because a billionaire showed up and paid a bunch of money, and we united around this billionaire's team.
That's right. You're not united if you didn't merge two teams, right? Like, in Judaism, we have all these synagogues that are like a merger of two synagogues. In Pittsburgh, we have a synagogue that's Beth Midrash HaGadol and Beth Jacob. And so they're Beth Midrash HaGadol - Beth Jacob. You don't name yourself that in advance. You don't come up with that off the top. You don't come up with a merger name off the top. So anyways, that's problem one. Is like there was availability for just doing the boring Inter Miami, you know, Minnesota United thing. They chose not to do that, even though the fact is there is no Boston United. There's no. So the second default position is you use some sort of like culturally relevant name that is related to your city, right? So the obvious one, like, is the Cleveland Guardians, who, in rebranding from a previous name that was offensive, picked a really cool logo from around the city of Cleveland. By the way, I just got back from Cleveland today. I went to a show last night there. Dispatch was playing. Dispatch also played in Pittsburgh, but they played in Pittsburgh on Yom Kippur, and I was a little bit busy, so I drove up to Cleveland and had a great time at a show. But anyways, point is, that's fertile ground for a thing. And then the last fertile ground, which people aren't using anymore, but they should, is, you know, like when the Toronto Raptors came in, or when, I don't know, the Tampa Bay Mutiny came in, they saw potential for a cute mascot, right? Like, you know, the San Jose Sharks, which had a really cool mascot when they came in the, I guess it was the 90s, which was, this would look good on a t-shirt, or this would make for a good mascot that would do funny things in the stadium, in the crowd, right? Those are good ideas. You know, the Pittsburgh Pierogies would be a great name. The Boston Loggers, you know, like there's like a million ways of going with this. Lager, not Loggers. But there were like hundreds of interesting names here, and they didn't go with any of them. Secondly, that's my long-winded first point. Secondly, much quicker, the color scheme is awful, Matt. It's this weird green and this weird raspberry color and black, and it looks like a mid-2000s rave, and like with like vaguely neonish colors. It's really cheesy and really tacky. There's just no creativity or there's nothing cool about this. And the last thing is, and I think this is unlikely, but it would have been interesting, there already was a Boston women's soccer team. In fact, Jordan Angeli played for them.
She scored a banger of a goal. I will put the
What was the name of the team?
Boston Breakers.
The Breakers. Yes. Breakers. Just call them the Breakers. Like, there's nothing wrong with that. I mean, maybe you want to get away from failed teams, and I get that, but like for those of you in Colorado, men of a certain age, when the Colorado Rockies were announced, a lot of people got, not a lot, but a small number of people who remembered got upset because there already had been a Colorado Rockies. There was a failed hockey franchise called the Colorado Rockies back in the late 70s, early 80s. I have no recollection of it, but apparently it was a thing. Like, you know, there's lots of opportunity for names, and you can reuse old names. You can come up with creative ones. This was none of those things. The color scheme wasn't good. The unveil was bad. It was bad all around. You know, just instead of hiring marketing teams and focus groups, just pay me and Matt to come up with like three good ideas for your team name, mascot, and color scheme. I would bet all the money in my pockets against all the money in your pockets that Matt and I would come up with three ideas better than Boss Nation.
Jordan Angeli. People from Ford Ember a seat, like, to your point, like Mark, what would it take? Like, the honestly, like a 6-pack of beer and like a 1-hour Zoom session, I think would be like what our cost is. And like, we would be happy to provide some consultation on it. And that will include us giving, with consent, contact info for women, non-straight, non-white people in the Rapids community,
yeah,
just generally in the Denver soccer community, and say,
I'd
call
ask,
these people. And
I'd ask three gay friends and three trans friends, what do you think of this? Any chance it's offensive? And they'd be like, no, or yes, and then I wouldn't do it.
Okay. That's enough about sad things, Mark, or things that don't have to do with the Colorado Rapids, which are much more fun. So let's go to it. Listeners, this coming Saturday, October 19th, will be decision day, the final day of the regular season in Major League Soccer in 2024. All of the Eastern Conference teams are playing each other at the exact same time at 4 o'clock p.m. Mountain Time. And then all of the Western Conference teams are playing each other at the exact same time at 7 p.m. Mountain Time. So don't log on to Apple TV assuming, oh, the Rapids are playing away, it's a 7:30 game, or they're playing in Austin, so it's an hour ahead, so it's 6:30. Well, I guess if it's 6:30, you're just 30 minutes early, which is probably better than being 30 minutes late. But so, Mark, let's get to it. The Colorado Rapids, for the second, I think third straight year in a row, will be playing at Austin to finish out the regular season. Somewhat MLSsoccer.com, Mark, is just doing copy and paste with some of these scheduling things. With the result of LAFC beating Vancouver over the weekend, listeners, the Colorado Rapids are effectively only playing for seeding right now, and there's not a lot of movement. They can't be in the wild card. They will finish somewhere between fifth and seventh, so they can't move up to get a top four seed that gets them home and field advantage in that best of three. They cannot drop down into the wild card. They will be in the round of 16. They will be in that best of three series, and they will be the lower seeded team that has a home game in game two of that best of three series. Where they finish seeding wise is yet to be determined. And there's also, Mark, still some uncertainty in terms of who they could be playing. It could be Seattle. It could be RSL. It could be, if things go really, really poorly for the Rapids, LAFC, or even possibly LA Galaxy. So we know which nine teams will be in the Western Conference. There's some uncertainty in terms of who's seated where, and thus who everyone is playing right now. That's the one thing we don't know for sure. I think the only thing that we know for sure, Mark, is Portland will be away in the wild card, I think, but everybody else is up for grabs. So, Mark, I'm going to run through this really quickly. Houston is currently in fifth. They have 51 points. And then I'll just list the wins and goal difference because those are the two tiebreakers that are going to determine things. So Houston, fifth place, 51 points. They have 14 wins, one less than the Rapids, and a plus seven goal difference. Far better than the Rapids. The Rapids are probably not going to get a better goal difference than Houston if it comes down to that. Colorado, they're in sixth. They have 50 points, 15 wins, and a plus two goal difference. Minnesota are in seventh, 49 points, 14 wins, and a plus six goal difference. So Houston is 1 point ahead of Colorado. Colorado is 1 point ahead of Minnesota. Colorado has the wins tiebreaker right now, but also Minnesota and Houston will likely finish with the superior goal difference. There'd have to be some crazy stuff going on for that to not be the case or for that to not be relevant. Colorado Rapids, as I mentioned, are playing at Austin. Houston, Mark, are hosting LA Galaxy. There is a world, listeners, in which LA Galaxy get pipped by LAFC for the top seed in the Western Conference. So LA is going to Houston wanting to get a result. All they would need is a draw. That would help the Rapids. And then Minnesota are hosting St. Louis, who are out of the playoffs. They're already eliminated. But Mark, I think you'll remember, they're playing really, really well. And John Hackworth is probably thinking if they finish out the season strong, he probably gets the new permanent job from that position. And St. Louis did a lot of really good work in the transfer window after their two games that they played against the Rapids, which the Rapids won both of them. The 3-0, I think that was the Georgie hat trick, and then the 2-1 Ollie goal, I think, on 4th of July, or that might have been the Sunday after 4th of July. So St. Louis is a better team, albeit they have nothing to play for, but are in the ascendancy. LA Galaxy clearly trying to get a result against Houston. Kind of ironically, Mark, in terms of games that are affecting the Rapids, the only true team that's like completely out of it and has nothing left to play for is Austin FC, who after their second to last game of the season fired Josh Wolf, their first permanent head coach in club history. Davey Arnault, that's a name from years past in MLS, Mark, has taken over as the interim manager. And they're probably headed for a teardown. Sebastian Driussi has had some questionable actions that people have been tracking on social media in terms of his unhappiness at Austin and what that looks like. Obviously, they're going to have a new head coach. I don't think that will be Davey Arnault. And really, the only two uncertainties that you have for here, Mark, for me, is Diego Rubio is still starting up top in the 4-3-3, probably for Austin. And if nothing else, he would love nothing more than to confirm the Rapid skid from a form standpoint at the end of the regular season to have them be one and done in the playoffs. So there's that component. Rubio did not have a good performance in this reverse fixture. and maybe Davey Arnault plays a bunch of the bench guys, some homegrowns, maybe a U22 or a Generation Adidas guy who's gotten no play, who's then just excited to get an opportunity and really balls out, similar to what Sebastian Anderson did towards the end of the season for the Rapids. So I would look at a guy like Zan Kolmarnik. There's the fullback who they drafted a few years ago, CJ Fodry, who hasn't gotten a lot of opportunities. The other homegrown mark that you would say hasn't got a lot of playing time who could get in is Owen Wolf. I believe Josh Wolf's son. I'm not sure where that's going. Like, does Owen Wolf think that he's still going to be at the club next year, given they just fired his dad? Does he still want to be at Austin? So I don't know if Owen Wolf just kindly says, like, hey, can I just stay home and be done playing for this team? Probably. So those are my one, two. I'm not even going to say red flags, Mark. I'll say beige flags in terms of potential problems that the Rapids could be facing against Austin. Austin got a red card and did not play well in their last game against LA Galaxy. We don't yet have the injury report for this coming Saturday for the Rapids, Mark. But if we're trusting what Chris Armas told us ahead of the final home game of the season, Cole Bassett should be back in training and available. Kevin Cabral, if he's not available for this weekend, surely should be available for that first playoff game. And TBD on Zach Steffen, whose injury obviously came when he was with the United States. If all three of those guys are available, Mark, if Zach's starting, if Cole starts and gives you 60 minutes, and if Kevin Cabral can give you 30 minutes off of the bench, this for me comfortably should be a Rapids win, and that bodes well. Mark, your thoughts in a vacuum on Colorado versus Austin, and then we'll talk what it means from a seating and all the other scoreboard watching that Rapids fans will need to do on Saturday.
Yeah, I think I said this basically last week, but there's not a lot of depth here for Austin to reach into, and I just looked it up, and Owen Wolf has like 1,800 minutes played this year. This is not like playing a kid who hasn't got many opportunities this year. This is playing a guy who is a sometime starter because he's what you got. And there's not a lot of other guys on this team that aren't a known quantity. Yeah, I think you're right on the teardown for sure. But I mean, anybody's going to say that. Driussi is an obvious jettison candidate here. But then you've got some old heads who probably need to be moved on. Matt Hedges, Julio Cascante, Alexander Ring, who wasn't particularly useful this year after having an exceptional career in Major League Soccer, especially with his time with NYCFC and in his first year with Austin, which was 2 years ago. But it's time to turn the page. There's just not... Diego Rubio was definitely not the solution. Ethan Finley, Jossie Zardes. There's a lot of rebuilding to be done. And it doesn't start now. There aren't guys that you bring up right now and you say, oh, let's see if that guy will work. So Austin are playing for pride. That's always a little bit dangerous. There's no such thing as teams who, go through the motions. That's not really a thing so much in soccer, unless teams really are absolutely out of gas and totally frustrated and miserable. So they're kind of a wounded animal, and it's always dangerous a little bit when you play a wounded animal. So I think this is a tricky game for the Rapids. And I also think, like, the good news, though, is it would be great for Colorado to move up a spot on Houston. But that's going to be that's possible because Austin are weak and you can get a draw against them. While Houston, on the other hand, are playing LA Galaxy at home. And that's tough. But with the situation the way it is, because of the win-loss, the Rapids would need to do is get a tie and a Houston loss, and they'll move into fifth. So that's a good, I think, scene, and that's, I think, what I want, because all things staying the same, that means the Rapids play Salt Lake. Of course, there's another world where Salt Lake and Seattle, who are even on 56, flip positions for third, fourth. And then what that means is, even if Colorado lose, they wind up playing Salt Lake, or Colorado win or get a draw, move up to fifth. Seattle loses, and Salt Lake moves up, and then Colorado winds up with Seattle. Anyways, I don't like either of those. I think I like the Rapids playing Salt Lake. I don't love the idea of them playing Salt Lake as the underdog with one home game and two away. But in a three game series, I think I'd like to take our chances at formerly Rio Tinto, I don't know what it's called anymore,
As America to, first feel.
Yeah, whatever. I'll get it eventually. But as opposed to playing away to Seattle, who, you know, that place is just a thunderdome of noise, and they put on a big show. Playing away to Seattle is brutal. I don't want to do it. So whatever happens, win or lose, I don't want to have to. I'd rather play Salt Lake.
We were going to talk about scenarios in terms of what all of that looked like, Mark, because it is really complicated as I documented.
Well, I tipped it off because you stole all the good things to say about the game matchup anyways.
Okay. But
as you always do, because you're full of brilliance.
So let's pivot this. Let's actually do, Mark, I'll run through the scenarios and what's going on here from a seeding standpoint in terms of the top four teams. I'll talk about the matches that they have involved. We already talked about
Galaxy. By the way, listeners, if you're new to the podcast, this is Matt's favorite thing. He does it every year. He loves the deep mathematical nerding. This is what made him an engineer versus me being a rabbi and a wordsmith. Like, all the numbers will get lost in my head. So you may want to keep a piece of paper and a pencil by your side while we go through this.
Let's be fair. Of all of the Rapids outlets that you could go and consume content, we're the one that gives you homework, or we're the one that gives you a work cited for doing the extra reading. And I don't apologize for that. Whether or not you want to do that homework is entirely up to you. We do not hand out grades or judge people who don't read stuff. We just fact check and provide information for you. So, Mark, as I mentioned, there's a scenario where LA Galaxy lose and LAFC win, and LAFC overtake LA Galaxy for the top seat. I have to think the two SoCal teams are looking at this as if they meet in the playoffs in a Western Conference final, home field for an El Tráfico to go to MLS Cup is going to be absolutely massive. So we already talked about LA Galaxy are at Houston, and they just need a point, and LAFC can't overtake them. LAFC are hosting San Jose. San Jose have already won the spoon. So, Mark, if there's any game in the West this weekend that I already know the results of, I would predict multi-goal victory for LAFC. So if LAFC win and LA Galaxy lose, and then there's some goal difference that would come in there as well, LAFC could jump them. But I think probably Galaxy gets some kind of result against Houston, and then that means that no matter what, they will finish as the top seed. Then you've got, it's impossible for Seattle or RSL to jump LAFC. So listeners, effectively, it's the two LA teams, 1-2, and then it's Seattle or RSL, 3-4. There's no mixing between the second seed and the third seed. So Seattle and RSL are tied on points. Seattle has the better win total. They're on 16, RSL's on 15, and then they're tied on goal difference. So this could come down to, you know, the final minutes, depending on what the goal situation is. Well, Seattle is hosting Portland. Portland, we already know their fate, but that is a Cascadia Cup game. Portland has done a very good job in years past, both in the regular season and in the playoffs, of absolutely boat racing Seattle at the clink, something the Rapids have not been able to do against Seattle Sounders. And then RSL are playing the other Cascadia team, Vancouver Whitecaps, who are skidding into the playoffs even worse than the Rapids are. They're facing that situation as well. So, Mark, we already kind of talked about it. Rabbi, I'm going to assume we don't want to play either LA team in the first round, right? Because the LA
Galaxy... We do not. Yes. Not even a little bit. In no way, shape, or form. That is hot death from above.
So you mentioned, I think it's interesting, Mark. So I'm going to disagree with you. I would agree the more interesting matchup, or the one with more juice, or the one that is going to get the Rapids relevant in terms of matchups that neutrals are watching, is absolutely a Rocky Mountain Cup playoff series. I think the one good thing you have about the best of three series is when you get a derby matchup, it's absolutely crazy. Imagine a Hudson River Derby best of three, Mark, in the Eastern Conference, or like what we saw last year with, I guess the I-70 is what they're calling it, St. Louis City in their expansion season versus SKC, and SKC upsetting the number one team in the MLS Western Conference from the regular season. I don't want that game, Mark, exclusively because, just like how I'm feeling about playoff baseball right now, it's not fun during. It is type 2 fun. There will be no enjoyment of the series until it's actually done. And if the Rapids lose, it will be horrible, horrible pain, and something that RSL fans will be trolling for years to come. And you can only enjoy it afterwards if the team ends up winning. It will be type 2 fun at best. It might be a miserable experience, and it would potentially, if RSL is able to win that, undo all the good and all the joy that came from finally clawing back the Rocky Mountain Cup. this past July. So you almost don't want that one mark because it's the one series you can't afford to lose and the one you would absolutely want to win. And so it just feels like the stakes would be way too high and way too emotionally ridden. Whether or not the team feels about that, probably not. I think from a fan perspective, that's absolutely true. Here's my argument, Mark, why I think Seattle would be the better matchup for the Rapids and why I fear the Seattle Sounders a little bit less than I would feel that because Darby's exist in their own ecosystem. The version that we saw of Seattle, Mark, a couple weeks ago in the final home game, I think is the best version of themselves that they're going to be. I don't think Raul Diaz is coming back. And if he does, he's going to be a shell of what he's been in previous years. And I'm not sure he unseeds Jordan Morris, given what Morris has done at the number nine position. And I think in the absence of that, Seattle's a relatively known quantity in terms of what they have with Stephen Fry, Jackson Reagan. We talked about their midfield a couple weeks ago as well. And then Pedro de la Vega hasn't really gotten running because he hasn't really been healthy the whole time. The Roldans, Mark, haven't exactly bossed the game in their two games that they've had playing on their right, Colorado's left side, in the two games that these teams have played each other. So as much as we have trepidations about Sam Bynes coming back from injury and being a weak point at some point, or a point that other teams attack at the left back position, or an inexperienced Jackson Travis, or Reggie Cannon, who's still the new guy on the team, we've not seen the Roldans on their right, Colorado's left, absolutely boss and control that flank. And so I think the difference between where Colorado was not having Cole Bassett, not having Kevin Cabral in that game at home, the Rapids have more potential, like their ceiling is higher getting those two guys back than where Seattle's ceiling is at. Seattle is at their ceiling. I think this is the best version of themselves that they're capable of being. I think they can beat the teams that on paper they're better than. I think they would get wrecked by LAFC. I think they could get it to a third game if they're in the best of three. Well, they're not going to play LA Galaxy in the best of three. The only reason I would give them a chance for LA Galaxy in the best of three is if something goes wrong for LA in that one game going on in Carson. So I think we know what Seattle is, Mark. They're a known quantity. They're not going to be any surprises, and they're not going to be any better in an away playoff game at the Richard than they were a couple of weeks ago. And we know from what we've seen from the Rapids this year, the Rapids can get a lot better. The fact that there was the international break between the penultimate weekend of the season and decision day is going to be huge. The fact that it's probably going to be a full week between each of these games in a best of three is going to be huge for the Rapids recovery. And the fact that they're getting back, I would argue their most important, not their best midfielder, and I would argue their best winger in Kevin Cabral and Cole Bassett, respectfully, or flip those two. Bassett's the best, the most important midfielder. Kevin Cabral's been the best winger on the team, means that their ceiling raises relative to the opponent. And so for those reasons, I think the Rapids absolutely get to a third game against Seattle and have a chance to win against Seattle. So I would prefer, Mark, to take for the Rapids to face the Seattle Sounders. There would also be no expectations or no noise going on there in terms of the Rapids fumbling the bag, like I think there would be with RSL. Listeners, let us know your thoughts. Email us, rapids96podcast@gmail.com. Tweet at us at Rapids96Podcast. Use the hashtag AskHTHL. We would love to know who do you want to see the Rapids play, regardless of their seeding. Okay, Mark, let's actually get to the seeding scenarios. Listeners, I will post a link to the tweet that I put on this for Burgundy Wave because it's really, really complicated in terms of all of the scenarios, because you've got three teams, all of which could jump or fall behind each other, all within one point of each other. One, two, three, between Houston, Colorado, and Minnesota. As an audio podcast, I'm going to make this really, really simple. If Colorado gets a better result than Houston, they jump Houston. If they get the same or a worse result than Houston, they do not. If Colorado gets the same or a better result against Minnesota, they jump Minnesota. If they get the same or worse result, they fall behind Minnesota. Unless it's a Colorado loss and a Minnesota draw, in which case Colorado still has the tiebreaker on wins. That's the simple scenario. That being said, you're still going to have to do a bit of scoreboard watching on Saturday, and you're still going to have to, hopefully, Apple TV will have like the live standings and everything, because there's a possibility, listeners, with the results that Colorado could be drawing Austin and Houston could be losing to LA Galaxy, at which point Colorado would be above Houston. But then if Minnesota is beating St. Louis, then in real time, the Rapids stay in sixth. It would just be Houston and Minnesota swapping places. So that's all the scenario. That's the really simple thing. Get a better result than Houston. Get a better result or the same result than Minnesota, as long as it's not or get a better or same result as Minnesota. And then even if it's Rapids losing, Minnesota drawing, that's absolutely okay. But you are rooting for St. Louis. You are ironically rooting for LA Galaxy on Saturday. Mark, did all of this make sense, or have I just confused our listeners more?
Oh, it's 100%. Everyone's totally clear now.
Okay. Mark, let's do some predictions here. What do you see in terms of how do things shake out? So what result does Colorado get against Austin? What does that mean for their seeding? And what does that mean for the opponent that they will play on come the playoffs?
Rapids win, Houston loses, and everything stays the same, and we wind up with RSL. That's my guess. What do you think?
I think the Colorado Rapids will defeat Austin FC. I think LA Galaxy will get a result against Houston, whether that's a draw or a win. So a Houston loss or a Houston draw doesn't really matter. As long as Colorado wins and Houston doesn't win, Colorado will be the fifth seed in the Western Conference, which means they will play the fourth seed. And I think that fourth seed, Mark, will be the Seattle Sounders. So I think Portland gets a result in Seattle, and I think RSL absolutely melts the Vancouver Whitecaps. But if nothing else, Mark, at least, Mark, both of us have the Rapids avoiding LAFC, thank God, because that would be the six would be the worst situation in that scenario, Mark, because then guaranteed you get one of the LA teams, or excuse me, seventh seed, you would get one of the LA teams no matter what. So I would say the fifth and sixth, I think, is okay, Mark, but absolutely seventh is a new level of hell in terms of the Rapids having to go away to one of the LA teams and potentially struggling. Anything else decision day specific do we want to talk about from a Rapids perspective, Mark, or do we want to talk other stuff decision day and like end of season awards?
I'll just say that, and I think I said this last week, but I'll double down on it, which is like, it's always disappointing when decision day doesn't really have that much going on. I mean, it's nobody's in and nobody's out. There's a couple of teams that can move from wild card up out of the wild card, and there's a couple teams that can move up a couple spots to be in a better. I think the only significant thing here is getting yourself home field advantage for a round or for another round, and I think that's important. You know, if you're the fourth place team and you can move up to second, or the third place team and you can move up to second, then that's significant. Mostly this is not as big a deal as possible. I think every team is gonna who's still in the playoffs is gonna start mostly their starting lineup to keep it fresh. I don't think anybody's going with like a full hardcore squad rotation. I think that has more to do though with the fact that last week was an international week, and so nobody's really super tired, and so you kind of want to get guys in their rhythm for game experience. I never love that. I think the best alternative, the best scenario for teams is, or the most interesting thing is to be able, if you're like LAFC, to like rest half the squad. I don't think that's likely to happen. So it kind of bums me out. Nothing interesting this week. MLS will breathlessly in 360 make it sound like everything's dramatic and critical because that's how they sell it. Unfortunately, all of that is BS. Nothing is dramatic and critical this week. It's not an important week by comparison. The playoffs will be important and dramatic.
I will say, Mark, if we're comparing it, since we're talking about the two conferences is like in their own bubbles relative to each other, I would say the Eastern Conference absolutely has more juice in terms of jostling of seeding. Pretty much the only thing that you have locked down at this point are the top three seeds. So Miami's already won the Supporters Shield. Columbus and Cincinnati are locked into their situation. But then there's a bunch of seeding, a battle for fourth as well. And then the final two wild card spots are up for grabs as well, Mark. So DC and Montreal are in it right now, and then Philadelphia and Atlanta. So I would say absolutely, if you are looking for a appetizer to the Rapids game, I would say, you know, log on to MLS Season Pass, you know, at 4 p.m. and then definitely, you know, check out, I would say, you know, dual screen or probably 360 would be the better one for this. But that battle between those four teams through the top two spots, Mark, given what we've said about DC United on this podcast and Christian Benteke, the whirlwind season that Montreal always seems to have. And like, Mark, if I had told you, Mark, on in March that Philadelphia and Atlanta were going to be on the outside looking into the playoffs on decision day, and potentially only one of them gets in, you know, you would have told me that you're absolutely crazy. So watch that drama and enjoy that as a neutral who's just enjoying Schadenfreude, because two fan bases are going to be really disappointed with that. But yeah, from a West standpoint, we're battling for seeding, really, and that's effectively it. Mark, give me one game. If you had to pick, no scoreboard, no out-of-town scoreboard watching, so no dual screening, give me an Eastern Conference matchup on decision day that you would pick if you were to watch, you know, blinders, not paying attention to anything else.
Ooh. God, that's a really good question. So the DC United game versus Charlotte, if DC United, if the DC United can't get out of the wild card spot, there's no world in which they do. Charlotte can move up a little, but honestly, I'm just really, Christian Benteke has been super interesting this year. He's got 23 goals. I think, I'm not sure he's locked up the golden boot, but he's pretty close, right? That's an interesting match to watch. So I would put that one way up there. If you're going for games with teams that are like super interesting, from a tactical standpoint, then you've got to watch Columbus, New York Red Bulls. They're both really, really fun teams. Red Bulls are not clicking on all cylinders, but they can frustrate teams. They have kind of a scrambly style this year that I really, really like. It's not the high press of the old days, but Columbus are so organized. They're just like they have been the last couple of years, and they're quite the machine. And if you kind of want to watch something sad, you can watch Orlando take apart Atlanta United. For those of us who remember a couple of years ago, the days of Atlanta United being a total machine, and completely dominant, that was good times. By the way, there is a world, I think, where, there's a world where Montreal can fall out of the playoffs and Philadelphia are out of the playoffs, right? But there's a world where world where Philly can make it in. Yes. There's a world where Philly and Toronto can make it in over Montreal. I don't know that that's that exciting. Like, none of those teams are good. So I don't know that's super interesting. They'll all be motivated, but Philly's got a game against Cincinnati, and that's going to be a tough one for them because Cincinnati have a lot to play for. They're gonna want to hold on to that third spot, and they also they never quit. So I guess the game that it's a weird choice, I guess, because DC United aren't going to move up or down the table much, but I really do think that like the DC United game is a really good one. So I'd pay attention to that. DC United versus Charlotte.
I'm going to pick Orlando versus Atlanta, Mark. That's obviously a rivalry, even though Joseph Martinez isn't there to troll Lions fans anymore with the Orlando. But also I'm curious, Mark, what's that even going to look like, given that, you know, the hurricane just came through and Orlando's hosting a home game on decision day against one of their regional rivals, and they're fighting for home advantage in the first round of the playoffs, and Atlanta's fighting for their season as well. What does that look like? What does that energy look like? I think in terms of like MLS weirdness, but also in the context of, you know, the hurricane as well, I think would be an interesting one. If we're not picking, of course, you know, I love me some Benteke, so I agree with your pick on that. Mark, MLS season awards. I am a voter, listeners, in case you were wondering. MLSsoccer.com's done a better job with some of the more major outlets that have covered teams in terms of local individual markets. So Burgundy Wave has a vote, so I will be voting on behalf of that. Mark, you did not get a vote, so I apologize. I will petition for an HDHL ballot to get to you for next year. But we've got season awards, Mark. Listeners, there's been a lot of banter in terms of the national media for MLS MVP and whether that should be Columbus's Cucho Hernandez or Lionel Messi, and contrasting what Cucho did across multiple competitions for a Columbus team that was very successful versus Miami and what he was able to do statistically in playing a little over half of the games, but also Miami being successful in the times that they were without him. There are other pundits who are better at evaluating that. I still have not figured out who I am voting for when it comes to MVP, but you know, Mark, I think if Colorado had finished strong, or if they'd already locked up a top four seed, I do think Chris Armas would get some votes for Coach of the Year. I think if I had to guess, that's probably going to Wilfred Nancy. Tata Martino will probably get some votes, even though I don't think he would be deserving. Put Messi on the Rapids, and I think the Rapids are certainly a top four team in the MLS Western Conference. And the other one that I've seen is Dean Smith coming in from Europe, his first year coaching in MLS, a lot of new players, and Charlotte doing a really good job and possibly being a giant killer come the Eastern Conference playoffs if we're talking about them playing one of the Ohio teams or even Messi and Inter Miami. Mark, what do you see in terms of Coach of the Year and whether or not, you know, Chris Armas is going to get some votes for there, and any other candidates that you think could be in that conversation?
Well, that is a really good question, Matt. I think the big questions about like Coach of the Year have to do with like how much you think it is like your overall performance as a concept. So like the default position on Coach of the Year would be Tata Martino and Inter Miami because they won Supporter Shield. But I think LA Galaxy and Greg Vanney is probably a very good chance since they weren't specifically very good in the past. And they didn't make a lot. I mean, they made some big changes. They added Peck and they added Paintsil, and that's a big addition. But there's a world where you add to a lot of teams add several former players, and that works. Wilfred Nancy is fantastic. I love him. I think he is like an amazing coach. I mostly say that because I interviewed him last year at the Open Cup match when they played the Riverhounds. The Riverhounds won, of course. I don't know that there's a world where Steve Cherundolo is in the mix. I think he's up there, but I think LAFC weren't quite high enough in the table. I think the Rapids being as far down the table as they are makes that one a tough one. I guess the outside dark horse coach of all of them, I think, it's Vanney and Martino's to lose. I think the dark horse here is Ben Olsen. I would love that. I think that's a great, that'd be a great call. Houston are only a few spots above the Rapids in the overall table. But, you know, I think Houston has been pretty mediocre the last couple of years. And I think Ben Olsen had a rough ride at the end with DC United. I don't think anybody believed in that guy. And he turned out to be, to prove that he could take a team that struggles and make them into something. I also don't think that there's anything specifically amazing about this year's Houston Dynamo team over last year's Houston Dynamo team. They added a couple of players that kind of like fix things up. But for the most part, it's more or less a bunch of misfit toys and a mix of last year's players. And they found a way to get wins out of that. There's nobody on this lineup that I look at and go, you know, they're a dominant player and he kind of drove them to like, there's a whole bunch of kind of like funny parts that he put together here and made do good things. Griffin Dorsey is a solid player, but unspectacular. Hector Herrera is probably starting to get into the decline years. Coco Carrasquillo is a great player, but getting him to work with other people successfully. Amin Bassi, very good, but I don't think that was definitely necessary to click. Artur has been around this league for a long time and is not like a plus-plus player. So anyways, I could go on and on about why Ben Olsen's great, but I like Ben Olsen here. He's the dark horse, though. I think the even money's on Greg Vanney. Matt, you have a thought?
I think about the vote. I don't even look at the ballot or properly fill out the ballot until after decision day. I am team. I wait as late as possible to fill out my ballot so that I have as much information as possible. I do not get the members of the media or other people who have a vote in terms of the All-Star game, putting that in like when there's still like a month to go before the All-Star game. And so I will wait for all of the information, including the 34th game, which for me is just as important as the first game of the season. Before making decisions, I will probably end up voting for Wilfred Nancy for Coach of the Year with what he's done. While the scope of the season awards are supposed to only take into account what is done in the regular season. So I agree if a team has a terrible MLS regular season, but then were to win Leagues Cup or the CONCA Champions, you wouldn't necessarily take that into account. But what Wilfred Nancy has done in the regular season, given the two Continental Cup runs that they had, winning one final, getting to another final on the road, I think should be taken into account. Mark, I think if the Rapids had locked up top four, I probably am voting for Chris Armas. I do think Armas will get some consideration from a number of voters. I do think there's a possibility he gets some votes. He will not win it, and I don't think he gets. I think the number of votes that he would be getting would tank if the team ends up finishing seventh, regardless of the results on decision day that end up leading to that as well. And that's kind of disappointing, because if you'd asked me in July, I probably would have said Armas should be getting a consideration. I think certainly a month ago this time, or after the Toronto game with where they were seating wise, they absolutely Armas deserved to at worst finish second for that as well. So I think Wilfred Nancy will win it. Wilfred Nancy will probably get my vote. I will vote for one of Cucho, Hernandez, or Messi. Messi will probably win it because it's a popularity contest, regardless of all of the campaigning almost that Sasha Kljestan and others are doing on social media, saying that the scope of that is messed up and you are not serious people, and we should all vote for Cucho Hernandez as well. I don't think that there's anybody else, Mark, who remotely, any other Rapids personnel who remotely is in consideration for any of the other awards. I think if there wasn't for, if we got like a full ballot, Mark, like we got to vote for like three players or five players, or if there was, you know, like rank your top 10, then I think Georgi Mihailovic probably gets some MVP votes. Maybe Rafael Navajo gets, I think, less than Georgi, but still would get some. I don't think Zach will get anything for goalkeeper of the year, just because everybody's going to still look at that post shot XG stat, even though I think that's an oversimplified way of looking at his season. I think if there was a best 11 mark for the Leagues Cup, I think Zach Steffen should have been the goalkeeper for the best 11 for Leagues Cup, but that's not what we're, that's not the assignment that we're looking at right now in particular. And then I think if Moise Bombito was still a Rapids player, Mark, I think the Rapids are having a better season and Moise continues in the ascendancy. And I think he would get some, he would finish top five in terms of defender of the year, probably. I will probably end up voting for Steven Moreira from Columbus. There's stuff that he's doing as a third center back, sometimes wing back, that I think like four other players in the history of MLS have done at that level as well. And I think that'll do it in terms of like major awards as well, Mark. I think the other one would be, I need a better understanding. I need to look. I'm not sure what the scope or the requirements are for newcomer of the year. If we're saying that Georgi leaving MLS and coming back makes him newcomer of the year, I think he would be in consideration. I don't think he's eligible because he's played in MLS previously, in which case I'll probably vote for Gabriel Peck, who you just mentioned, and put all the plaudits towards in LA Galaxy. You're probably selling him in a year or two for $15 or $20 million.
Oh, yeah. I just wanted to qualify. Yeah, Benteke has 23 goals, and next up is Chicho Hernandez with Columbus Crew on 19. So he's got to score, or Dennis Buonga with LAFC also on 19. So they have to score four goals to draw it. So yeah, I think it's over. I think Benteke is going to like get a tapper just to kind of prove it. But
yeah, well, maybe that's it. With Dennis Buonga is coming back from international duty, so he missed the game against Vancouver for LAFC, Mark. But I could see Steve Cherundolo potentially starting Buonga and seeing if he can get off to a quick start, and maybe even like saying like, hey Drew, pass it to Buonga instead of shooting, to like see, does he get an early goal against San Jose, and then does San Jose's head drops, and you know, and could he be fighting for a hat trick come like the 60th, 70th minute? I think if that doesn't happen, like you said, Mark, it's probably Benteke probably smashes something past Montreal sometime in the first 60 minutes, and that's probably enough, barring an absolute collapse from,
by the way, like health matters, because the player with the most goals per 90 is Lionel Messi, and then second place is Alonso Martinez for NYCFC, and third place is Luis Suarez, and none of those guys is in the golden boot race because they didn't play enough games and they weren't healthy enough. So just show up. Like, a lot of life is just showing up, Matt. The fact that I don't take any sick days every year, I just keep showing up to work. I'm not the best rabbi in America. I'm just the rabbi that keeps showing up to work.
perfect attendance gets you pretty far in this world, Mark. It's fitting, given I think it's been a while since we've said this, Mark, but what's our staying power in the Rapids community from
That's
a
right.
good FC standpoint? The fact
Damn it, kids, be mediocre, but just keep showing up every Monday and they won't fire you. That's what I think. That's life advice. Tell me about it.
No matter how bad any particular game is for the Rapids or the run or a particular season, we're still going to be back. We're going to be back on Tuesday, Wednesday, podcasting about this team no matter how bad it is. And no matter how bad this playoff run goes, or if the season's bad, or if they end up being terrible next year as well, Mark, we're still going to be here while a bunch of
that
people
is
are
true.
Going to be checking out
that is true.
And waiting for the Broncos.
We don't quit because the soccer gets bad, and we've proven that season after season with the Colorado Rapids.
I think there's almost an argument, Mark, that HDHL, like in a vacuum, is better, or it's the, I think we're more entertaining or even more hilarious, I think, when the Rapids are terrible. Whether or not we're more insightful, I'll leave it up to the listeners. But, Rabbi, shall we land this plane?
We're the MVPs. Absolutely, Matt.
Listeners, you can follow us on Twitter at @soccer_rabbi, at @LWSMattPollard, and at @Rapids96Podcast. Check out our Substack, holdingthehighline.substack.com. That's where you can support us financially. That's where you can get our merch. That's where you can find Mark's written work on the PIDs. Find my written work at burgundywave.com. Send us your questions using the hashtag AskHTHL or via emailing us. Rate, review, share, subscribe. Wherever you get your podcasts, tell your favorite person who's obsessed with D-Day, who's not me, the other D-Day, not Decision Day, like D-Day, World War II, about the Rapids and about us to get them interested in the Rapids going into that playoff run. Listeners, we will see you next week as we preview the first leg of the best of three series for the Rapids playoffs in the 2024 MLS Cup playoffs.
Good stuff. Peace.